What I want to do, I want to clear all the lines, because the guy just got into town. He's been a little busy. He's only had 3 hours of sleep, because when you're the public safety director of the 11th largest city in the country, you never know when things will happen. But Troy Riggs is here. What we want to do today is give you an opportunity. Everybody thinks that the public safety director is over the police, and they are, but they're also over animal control. They're also over the fire department. They're over Homeland Security and maybe some other stuff we don't even know. So if you've got concerns that you want the director to know, not stuff from 1984, not stuff from 1973, but things that the director ought to know about as he's learning about the public safety team, and if you've got some good things to say about police and fire and animal control and Homeland Security, this is your opportunity. 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseindy.com, or send me a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. He wants to talk to as many people as possible. He doesn't want to hear from me. He'd rather hear from all of you. But since he's been a little busy, let me first ask Director Riggs. First of all, welcome. Welcome to Indianapolis, first of all.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, I have to say, as you progress through your career in life, right, and growing up in Louisville, Kentucky, and retiring from the police department there and moving to Texas for 3 years, it's always been a great city for me to visit. Mm-hmm. I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would actually be employed here in the great city of Indianapolis. And I turned down a lot of jobs and turned down the opportunity to apply for a lot, but couldn't turn down this one. This is a great city. And I know your listeners know that, and I know you understand that, but to me, coming in, it's a great place. We have great employees, and I love the atmosphere of the Midwest.
One of the things you said yesterday at one of the press briefings was how much you appreciated the public safety team coming out on their own to respond to the tragedy on Fairfield Drive down on the southeast side.
I tell you, I was, and I'm sorry, my voice is
Hello.
I've been talking a lot to emergency personnel the last couple of days, but we had 110 firefighters during the peak of this response, 75 police officers. And I can tell you, it's easy to count the police officers because they have take-home cars and things, but we had 25 officers that showed up off-duty, numerous firefighters. There was a lot of firefighters and police officers running around in a pair of shorts. It was a warm night, and tennis shoes, doing their job. And when I talked to a couple of them, they told me that they heard an explosion, they felt the explosion, they knew something was dramatically wrong, had gone wrong. Mm-hmm. They jumped in their cars and they headed in the direction where they saw the smoke. Mm-hmm. They knew they needed to be there. So, you know, they didn't know if they had the proper gear. They didn't care. They knew people were in trouble when they showed up. Then, when they showed up, citizens of Indianapolis started showing up and just giving donations before we really put the announcement out that we had people that didn't have clothing, food, and et cetera, and showed up. I talked to one lady, and it made me laugh. She said her son had gone off to college. Mm-hmm. She saw there was a need. She went to her closet, pulled all of his stuff out because she figured if he didn't take it, he doesn't need it. So somewhere in Indianapolis, there's a young man that's going to be here this weekend, and he's allowed to go shopping.
Now, this is an ongoing investigation, both from the civil side and the criminal side. You know, it sweeps, so the television stations are going crazy. Everybody's starting to speculate. Should people be cautious about what they're hearing on television or reading in the newspaper until your team investigates? The feds are here, you know, also to examine what's going on.
They do. They need to be very cautious. And I'll tell you why. I know that you're going to hear a lot of stuff and there's going to be a lot of things. And believe me, if the public's hearing about it, we have top-notch investigators. They know about it. They're hearing about it. But the thing is, anytime you have an explosion of this and there's a loss of a human life, two tragic lives lost, two young people trying to start their lives together, and you've got two individuals that are deceased, we have to treat everything as a criminal case early on because we don't know where the truth is going to lead us. So that means we're very careful. We are stingy with information because if it ends up being criminal, we want to make sure that we have successful prosecution. That doesn't mean we think it's criminal. It's just standard operating procedures at this time.
The other thing is you got to see up close how coordination is supposed to work in these kind of emergencies. And obviously, you're probably taking mental notes or jotting things down on how good it was, you know, how it could be better.
I did. And let me say this, and you will find that I'm very honest and we will share information with the public, and that'll become more and more apparent in the next few months, especially in January when we do some big announcements. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I saw when I arrived there on the night of the explosion, a great coordinated effort by emergency personnel. Is there always room for improvement? Absolutely. But I will tell you this. I don't think I've ever seen anything move so well and as flawless as they operated together. Fire department doing what they do, EMS standing by for any victims. Police department had individuals in pockets around, going, clearing homes, doing everything. Operationally, we're very sound. What we've been working on today is that we want to make sure we continue that practice post-event. Okay. We want to make sure that we continue the investigation. We want to make sure that those residents that need help get help and start the rebuilding of their lives in that area. I've asked those residents that are, all of them been adversely impacted. Some have lost everything. We're asking them for patience because investigations take time. But the mayor has said, and we have said publicly, we're going to do everything we can. We have set together an operations center, put Homeland Security in charge of it. This is going to be a long-term process. Now, that's something a little bit different that's been done in the past, but it's best practice, and we're going to do that as common practice. And as back to your point, in a couple of weeks, when everything settles down a little bit, we're going to call all the main players into the room. We're going to ask some of those citizens, and we're going to debrief and find out what we did well in those rooms, in the areas that we can improve.
The other thing is this voluntary curfew for that subdivision, for right. that area.
Yes.
I've never seen that done before, and obviously it's to keep bad guys out, it's to keep souvenir hunters out, it's to keep the curious out, and it's also to protect the folks whose homes are okay from, you know, make sure that they're safe.
That is true, and you know, that is not my idea. That was the idea from the police department.
Uh-huh.
They said it would make it a little bit more manageable, and it did. Mm-hmm. It helped, and people complied, which meant that we did have two young men that were trying to get into the area last night. They were, we found them, we identified them, we took their identifications, we let them on their way. They hadn't done anything wrong, but they weren't supposed to be there. They had no reason to be there, and I guarantee you they won't be back. So we want to make sure that we, you know, we do a good job protecting people's lives and home. And let me say this, I had a comment earlier, someone was asking about Chief Height, and I hope the chief doesn't mind, but he had some family issues he had to go out of town. It just happened he was out of town during this. But I can tell you that Chief Height has been on the phone. Mm-hmm. He's been coordinating things. He's on top of things. I talked to him this morning. He shared some good ideas. And even though, and we can all be caught out of town during something,
right.
but even though he was out of town, he was still engaged in a lot of the decision making.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. He is the public safety director of Indianapolis and Marion County. So, What do you want the public safety director to know about his departments? Fire, animal control. Can we always talk about the police? I just want to bring up fire, animal control. You know, does he need more animal control officers to get all the pit bulls off the street? Police, what's good? What's not so good? What do you want him to know? Let me start with Tabitha. Hi there.
Hello. I have a question because I called last week. I was in an accident on October 26th, where I was hit head-on. I was coming from 33rd and Arlington. I turned east on 21st Street, and I was headed to Warren Central High School for my son's last football game. Well, before I could get there, I was hit head-on. The police report is incorrect. The police report states that I hit someone and that I was pulling out of a private driveway, which is inconsistent with how my car is hit. And I had no idea that that information was going to be reported that way. I had to be cut out of my car. I was taken directly to Methodist Hospital. No police officer ever came to the hospital to speak with me. I never got a chance to speak with anyone. And I've been trying to call for ever since, and no one has called me back yet. Now, the person at the crash investigator office, he has been taking my information and trying to help me, but I still have not got a call back from that police officer. The car is totaled, and the insurance companies will not move until the police report is updated.
All right, let me let the director respond. Yes, Tabitha called on Friday. We have her information, including, most importantly, the case number. of this particular case. But this points out, you know, what a frustration that we hear from residents on both major crimes and minor instances, trying to get additional information from law enforcement. I recognize that law enforcement is shorthanded.
Well, you know, one of the things that we want to improve is our relationship with the public and sharing information. In her case, you know, I don't have all the details, but I know we're taking down the information. But I want to give everybody a number. So if you have a, if you ever have a report that you don't agree with and you want to share that with us, and let's remember, throughout the nation, most police reports are officer opinion. And they can, and you can go to court and you can discuss that. But what I always ask people to do is give us a call. Let us get you in contact with a decision maker. I think you at least deserve an answer. You may not like the answer, but you at least deserve an answer. You need some feedback. So my number, 327-5086 is my office, 327-5086. You call that number. Someone doesn't answer, leave a message. We'll get back to you, and I want to make sure that we're meeting your needs or we're giving you information. Now, if you've got an issue, call. But it, also, one of the things I ask citizens to do, if an officer or firefighter or one of our employees does something good, give me a call and let me know so I can write that down and make sure that we put that in their personnel file. It goes a long way for the morale of
so
our
it's
employees.
Both. You want to hear both. Want to hear the good. You know, an officer does well, firefighter does well, animal control officer does well. You want to hear that as
we
well.
Do. And we want to improve.
The EMT, I can't forget the EMTs. They get mad at the EMTs as well.
Exactly. We want to correct behavior that may not be so positive, but we also want to reward individuals for doing a good job every day.
And Tabitha, we have the information, and we're going to share that with the director.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Let me go to Reverend Dinkins at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello, Raymond. How are you?
We're fine.
And say the director.
Reverend, good to talk to you.
I just want to take my hat off to our safety department because they went to New York, and then right here at home, backyard, we had an incident that further proves that the people and every safety department person needs to stand on Mayor Ballard's desk and let him know that by shortchanging us with safety directors and safety personnel, while he rides around in a car that's protected by policemen and keeping our lives in jeopardy, we need to stand there and let him know we don't appreciate it one bit. So I'm just saying I have nothing bad to say about our safety department because they're doing a great job. So keep up the good work.
All right, appreciate that. Thank you. I got a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. Has a gas leak been ruled out? Citizen says it's not gas. I live in the subdivision next to Richmond Hill, and it's very concerning. Thanks, Nikki.
No, it has not been ruled out. Actually, we think that may be the leading cause. We're not sure. Now, that doesn't mean we don't know. There's a lot of things people say, well, gas explosion, but something had to ignite the gas. Was there a leak? Was something left on? We don't have any of those. People won't say, well, the gas company's fault. No, we don't know any of that right now. We're leaning that direction that there was some type of gas involved in this. Okay. We're not for sure. But what I can tell you is that it's my understanding through the Homeland Security that the gas company has done a very good job of making sure that the lines are turned off there in case it is that. I don't think anybody in the city or around that area has to worry about that. I mean, there's a smell to gas. Something went horrifically wrong. We got to figure out what that is.
And there's federal assistance helping you guys out?
There is federal assistance. The federal government, at times, because it's a pipeline system, they will look. It's my understanding. You learn something every day.
Right.
And this is something that I was not aware of. The National Traffic Safety Board is in charge of this, and they showed up, and they look at basically the lines into the house.
Right.
And they'll be examining that. I think they did last night. They did some this morning. I don't know the details of their findings. I'm letting the investigators do
that. You're right. That is something. I didn't know the feds had anything to do. Hey, that may help pay for all this. 239-1310, 239-1310 on WTLC AM Indianapolis this afternoon with Amos with the new public safety director, Troy. Riggs, here's another Tony on the line. It looked like Troy, but I can't see today. Hi, Tony.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, officer. Yeah, I just want to say that I truly believe that, the officers, doing a good job. The gas leak, I just heard a little bit on the news about them being there before, possibly being there before, at that house. And so maybe they could have, you know, done something, you know, not screwed something tight enough or whatever. And especially if no one was home, so who else could have done, you know, the family dog couldn't have done anything. But it'll come out, with, you know, through the people, you know, if the police, you know, don't want to give it, you know, the information or the media, the people will tell, you know, what happened. So we'll find out sooner or later. But what I want to discuss with him is about, man, these intersections, man, they're running through actual red lights. And actually, you'll see a police officer sitting there. Only one time I've seen an officer go around me and pull a car over. But most of the time, they're actually running these lights. And y'all see them, but y'all don't. It seems like y'all don't. I know you're probably busy or you don't want to do the paperwork, but somebody's going to get killed when the snow hits. As soon as the snow hits the ground, then that's when the deaths are going to start rising. That's all I got to say.
All right, I appreciate that. Yeah, there's a tendency here for folks to be running the lights.
Yeah, we have been having a conversation, and remember, this is week three.
Yeah.
So I've been monitoring things for a month and been here for 3 weeks now, but are going on 3 weeks. And one of the things we've talked about is really looking at our accident rates, what type of accidents we're having, and really focusing our enforcement there. And one of the things that some of the officers and command staff have said is, like to do more on the traffic enforcement. It's really, you think of the situation that Chief Hyde is in. He has to balance everything. Being a police chief is an extremely, I've been a police chief.
Right.
It's an extremely difficult job. You're balancing your resources between crime prevention, crime response, emergency response, traffic control. And it's very difficult. But I can assure you that the chief and his command staff are committed to looking at issues, looking at data, in trying to improve our services. And I think he's had some success there.
Let me go to Vivian at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, it's Fabian.
Fabian, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Listen, I had a call concern is I had some paid company. Is it okay if I say the name?
Go ahead.
Okay, it's Patriot Restoration of Newcastle to do work on my roof. I gave them a $2,000 deposit, and that was back in the last of April. They were supposed to start work on May 3rd. They kept calling me, telling me because the weather was hot, this, that, and the other, or some contractor's father died and they had to go back to Mexico, this, that, and the other. Well, me and my husband finally went to Newcastle because we kept telling them we wanted our money back. And they said that they would have to sign a release for it to be let out of escrow, and they would never kept getting the papers, so I figured I'd go up there. Found out they had moved from that spot. Happened to be talking to another lady that had the same problem, and found out that they moved over on 14th Street. So we went over there. They were there. And I told the man I need the release so I can get my money. Well, I signed the release for the money to come out of escrow. Still, I have nothing, and here it is, November. And I tried to call the police department to file a police report to get the money to file a complaint. And the lady that I talked to when I was up in Newcastle said the man had a rap sheet. She sent me his rap sheet saying all the things that he had done. So what do I do to try to get my money back?
Ooh, that's a good. I was getting ready to send you the small claims until you said the magic word has a rap sheet. That's I don't want to put Director Riggs in a situation because he is not a police officer. He's an administrator.
Okay.
He's an administrator because if he was a police officer, they'd have to go take the test and be like Chief Riggs and get a certification.
I just couldn't understand why I couldn't file a police report against this. When I called the police department, they said no.
When you call Indianapolis police, they said you could not file a police report?
Right.
Ooh, see, I'm not sure. There's a crime of fraud, but I'm not sure whether that's civil or criminal. But if they got a rap sheet and it's close to what this alleged crime could be, it could be a crime, Director.
It could be.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, if they didn't take a report, they thought it was civil, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But if we gave that number, she wants to call and have us look into it, we'll find out exactly. And that's a perfect example. If that is the case, that should have been articulated to her, and she should have understood that when she called. But we can find out an answer to that. I'm assuming that's the case. But rap sheet, numerous victims, there may be a fraud case involved, and we need to revisit that.
All right, so Vivian, here's what I want you to do. I want you to hold on, give Chris your name and a number where you can be reached during the day.
Okay.
And they will give that, and we're marking, you know, the order in which it comes, and then we'll give that to the director's staff, okay?
All righty.
All right, appreciate it. 239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's name is We'll Take a Break. And the director will try to, in 3 minutes, catch up on some sleep. It's After News with Amos on a very busy Monday. Back to the phones with the new public safety director and Anonymous. Hi there. Anonymous, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Amos, and I just wanted to welcome the safety director.
Oh, thank you.
My comment is every day, Monday through Friday, at Washington Square Mall in the parking lot right near Burlington, 3 to 4 police officers every day just posted up. And it's just not a good look. It always makes me wonder, what are they doing? They're just sitting there. And I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I'm not sure why they're there. I mean, it could be they're taking a break. They could be meeting over something. That's where they meet, maybe with a sergeant. More than likely, quite frankly, all officers take breaks and meet together. You're right. It doesn't look good. We'll take that information, share with the chief, make sure we look into that. You know, one of the things that I've asked officers my entire career is be aware of your visibility, be aware of what the public thinks. You know, we are accountable to you as citizens, and we want to make sure that we're doing everything possible to keep you safe. And we'll look into it. We'll find out. And I'll tell you what we'll do with not only your comment, but with all the questions is, we're going to look into this over all these issues over the next week or two, and I'm going to send Amos an email and let him know our findings on all these items.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Anonymous.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let me go to Rev at 239-1310. Hi there.
Good day, Amos.
Good day.
And Public Safety Director.
Well, good day. And, you know, you all can – everybody can refer to me as Troy. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky in a small – very small home, I should say. And my mom always reminds me, don't worry about the title. You were Troy when you came in the world. You'd be Troy. So, and I appreciate the formality, but you can feel free to call me Troy. If you want to call me by title, then maybe Director Troy.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Troy. And Amos, hats off to you and everything you do for the community.
Thank you.
But I would like to bring up a point since we are talking safety. Right there at Mola Road and Pike Plaza, at night when the lights go to the flashing red light, I think that we might want to look into a four-way stop instead of just a two-way stop and crossing, because sometimes the light may turn early to the flashing red and yellow light, and there's still a lot of traffic going through there, especially on Friday and Saturday nights during the weekend. And that's the same with 46 and Mola Road. That's a very deadly intersection right there, 46 and Mola Road, if you're trying to make a left turn coming from Pike Plaza when those lights are flashing.
So wait a minute. They do the flasher after 11 o'clock out there?
Yes, sir, they do.
I'm with you. Folks coming from the clubs or folks coming from around, coming out of Meijer, because Meijer's a 24-hour store.
Yeah.
I can see where that worked 15 years ago as a flasher after 11 o'clock. I'm kind of with you, knowing the growth in that area.
And believe it or not, I've contacted the Mayor's Action Center, especially about the one at 46 and Mola Road, because you have to creep into the intersection just to see around the trees and the different things that have grown up over there.
Wait a minute. When did you last contact the mayor?
Oh my goodness, this has been over a month or two.
Did you get a ticket number?
No, sir, I didn't.
Wait a minute. You called the Mayor's Action Center, wanted action. They didn't give you a tracking number?
No, sir, they did not.
They didn't. They didn't say they could help you?
No, they said, well, we'll look into it. That's all the information I got.
Then let me ask the director, in terms of the coordination between a resident calling the Mayor's Action Center and say, I see a problem, and that kind of information impacts on public safety, Is that something, again, to look at, better coordination between the input that's coming in?
You know, it looked like it was going well. I mean, obviously there's issues
right.
at times, but I thought overall it had been working well. But I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll look into this. The thing that you have to remember is that a lot of that's traffic engineering comes
right.
up with that. They look at our data,
mm-hmm.
and we can do, you know, they do studies and things. But we can certainly ask, look at our accident data. And then get you an answer to share.
All right. Appreciate that. Thank you. Let me go to Monica at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Tori. My name is Monica. About 2 weeks ago, I received a traffic ticket, and I don't know the policy. Are the officers supposed to show me the radar to show me what my speed was? Because I really don't agree with the ticket, but I'm scared to go to traffic court because I was told that if I was found guilty, I'll have to pay more than what the ticket actually is. So I honestly don't know what to do because I don't feel like I was going the speeding limit that he said that I was going.
Well, you certainly have a right to go to court. That is your right as a citizen of this great country. I will tell you that one of the things that you hear about traffic officers all the time is that they have to show you the radar gun. That's pretty much in any state I've ever worked or been. That is kind of an urban legend. People believe that, but that is not true. They do not have to show you the radar gun. Or the new LIDAR system that is used as well. They don't have to.
What's the LIDAR system?
It's more like a laser system.
Okay.
It's actually, not that this will make anybody happy, but it's actually more accurate than a radar system.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see a lot. If you see an officer standing outside a car, if you're traveling, and you see an officer standing out, and it looks like they're pointing a gun at you, a large right. type weapon, like something you'd see on Star Trek, that's what that is. And it'll shoot a beam, and your radar detectors and none of that will pick it up. So there's different forms.
Where were you given the ticket? Where did this happen?
On U.S. 31. And the reason I don't agree with the ticket is because I was on the far right side. The officer was on a side street, and there are three lanes. Actually, there's four lanes there, but I was in the third lane. So maybe he caught the other two cars instead of my car. So I just don't feel like I agree with the ticket, but I'm scared to go to court because I don't want to pay more fees than the actual ticket.
And see, I can't remember. I know there have been some changes in traffic court, and I thought, and I can't look at the director. I got to look at his assistant. Didn't they change the rule in traffic court where you can't get fined more than what the fine is in the law? I think they made some changes. It was an outcry. The newspaper yelled at him. The Supreme Court slapped the hand of the judge in traffic court and kind of pulled his coat, pulled his robes. And I don't think that is supposed to happen anymore. But what you might want to do is also check with the neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic.
Okay.
And be absolutely sure of that. But it is, as Troy, I see, I'm too formal on the show. I want to call him director. As he said, you do have a right to, you know, stand up in court. Or is this your first ticket? Does it affect your points? You got a lot of points?
I have no points. This is my first ticket. But, you know, I feel like if I didn't do anything wrong, I don't want to pay for something that I didn't do.
Did they give you an option if you pay in a certain time that they would tear it up after a certain amount?
No, they did not, and I cannot afford to pay the ticket. It's another thing.
How much is the ticket?
$150.
Yeah, it is one of them. I don't know what the rule is on indigency. If you can't, you know, if you poor, there might be indigency. Now, if you got income, they're going to say, no, you got to be. I would check with Neighborhood Legal Clinic. I would also ask what options you have. Ask the court. Ask the office of the traffic court what options you have.
Okay.
As a first-time person, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Let me go to George at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, Amos, to your guest.
Yes.
Up at Kessler Boulevard, Box Hill, and Crow's Nest, when you get out there by Kessler Boulevard, it's hard to get out there, you know, because you got traffic coming Kessler Boulevard, and some traffic is turning onto
right.
Fox Hill. And other cars are keep straight. And then you got the other side over there. It's hard to get out there.
Are you saying it's time for the light?
Yeah, it's time for something, man. police standing up there, guarding the traffic. You know, it's real hard getting out there. Now you might get hit or anything, you know.
I'm more familiar with the intersection that Brother Riggs is. But there are certain times a day when they need a signal, and there are other times a day when they really the flashers could work.
Yeah, but see what I'm talking about. This is between, I'd say about 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
About around 8 o'clock in the morning. And then it started back, you said, about 3:30 in the afternoon to about around 6 o'clock. I'm not 6, but I said about 5:30, 6, yeah.
No,
somewhere
you,
around in there.
Yeah, okay.
That's like, when it's really
needs the rush hour, flasher.
Right.
In terms of public safety and accidents and analyzing and being more efficient with the dollars,
right,
how important is coordination between public safety and other departments of city, county government?
It's vital. Unfortunately, throughout the nation, you don't see that as often as you'd like, but mm-hmm. You know, since I've been here, I've already had people from our IT department reach out to talk to us about helping us become more efficient. Code enforcement has reached out about partnerships and increasing those partnerships. Obviously, with a lot of the street issues, looking at where we have our traffic data and different items. And a lot of these areas we will look, but a lot of times what you'll find is that the city's looking at that. They know there's a problem, but they may have a future plan for that. I'd like to get that information and share that with your listeners on those items.
I appreciate it, George. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's Name. We'll take another break. It is, tomorrow. Who's here tomorrow? Oh, everybody's here tomorrow. In our first hour, Jane Henniger, the head of the ACLU of Indiana, she'll be here live, followed by Scott Miller, the head of the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce. And if that's not enough, see, now I want to bring back some old school here for Troy. Mary Wilson, one of the original Supremes. We'll talk to her, and if that's not enough, we'll even talk to a real judge, Judge Hatchett. See, the legal things you can't answer, we'll ask Judge Hatchett. See, to get an answer from her. All that and more. It's After News with Amos for a Monday. All right, got another text message at 85620, keyword Amos. How does the new public safety director feel about civilian review and support for the current system?
You know, let me say this. I'm still reviewing the current system, and I want to look at the current system from beginning of investigation to the final discipline at the end and really get a good – the way it's structured, I don't have an issue with. I want to see how it works. I want to make sure it works well. I will say that I have no problem with civilian review at times on issues. I really don't. I never have. I will tell you that anyone that thinks that civilian review – is the answer to all issues regarding discipline in the police department. I think if you look at national studies, you will find that civilian review is, in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, much more lenient on bad behavior by police employees than police officials are and their peers. It's surprising. I've been in situations that are very similar to what we have here. We just need to make sure that we have the right people on that review that are serious about getting to the facts of the case. If an officer is wrong, an officer is wrong. If an officer is in the right, then they need to be in the right. But we need to make sure we're doing it appropriately.
When you look at crime statistics, I got an email that's pointing out the number of homicides that we've had to date, and is that an increase or a decrease? When I look at the data, because people see two words in homicide. They either see regular homicides, which includes a whole lot of things, or criminal homicides.
Right.
Either one of those were a little bit less at this point of the year than we were a year ago.
Yes.
But aggravated assault seems to be on the rise. When you look at crime statistics, here you are coming in, fresh set of eyes. What stands out to you as, this ain't right. We need to be looking at this.
Well, I'll tell you what stands out, and I've had a conversation with the chief and you know, with relatively new merger,
right,
when you really look at the history. And you know, you can't – some of the information before then, you're not sure how it was tabulated. So it's hard to draw any conclusions. But what you'll see in national surveys is somewhere around 30% of all crime is underreported. So you have to take crime stats for what they are. I want to make sure that we're giving citizens an opportunity to report crime. I want to feel like that they feel welcome to come and talk to us about crime issues. But when I look at the crime issues here – you know, aggravated assault's up somewhat. I'm concerned about that. I see the violent crime up right now. I think the numbers I saw this morning was about 6%. And it's usually because of aggravated assault. Homicides are down. But here's the thing is we don't want to say as a police department or as a Department of Public Safety, we're being successful because our homicide rate is lower than it was last year. What we really need to start doing, if we want to use intelligence-led policing the way it needs to be, we need to be looking at gun crimes. We need to be looking at how many people got shot. if we had more people got shot this year than last year, but our homicide rate is down, all that means is that the bullet didn't land in a critical issue. The intent was always the same.
Mm-hmm.
We need to really not just focus on homicides. We need to focus on aggravated assaults with weapons. And are they on the increase? Are they on the decrease? The other thing that will drive your homicide rate down is a good EMS system and a good hospital that goes there that's used to that.
Yeah.
So we can't hang all of our – we can't say we're successful or not successful just based on the crime rate. We have to take in a lot of other variables.
Where do we look at youth crime? Because usually in the past when homicides have spurted up, the assumption is, aha, it's those young people doing that. And then when I look at the data and know it isn't, it's more people in their 20s that are driving this in
right.
this town.
And it's, you know, it changes. I remember when I was in Louisville, most of our homicides were drug-related. And then one year when we broke down our homicides, we realized that for the first time in my career,
mm-hmm.
it was domestic-related.
Mm-hmm.
You need to look at those closely. Now, when it comes to young people very seldom, juveniles, are involved in homicides. That is not usually a trend you see in a city like Indianapolis. It happens, but it's not the driving force on that. But I will say this for young people, and you will hear more and more of this as we develop the Department of Public Safety. We're going to be reaching out to the faith-based community
mm-hmm.
and asking for help in any way possible. We're going to say invest in a young person. What I think the best crime prevention tool, the best thing to make sure that Indianapolis is a strong city 50 years from now, 100 years from now, is for us to invest in a young person that's having issues, to invest in a young person where they have someone that's holding them accountable, but someone that loves them and cares for them, that's mentoring them and encouraging them. When you have someone doing that, the faith-based organizations do that, it has long-time crime prevention impacts. We have seen people follow in the footsteps and generations, whether they're a preacher or they're a criminal.
Right.
If you're a criminal and you've been around drugs and you've had those factors in your life, you need somebody to give you some guidance. And I want young people to be successful. I think that's what's going to keep America successful and keep America leadership in the world, is if we continue to invest in leadership. So the greatest crime prevention that can be done is done by the community, not necessarily your police department.
Before I go back to the callers, one of the issues that comes up peripheral is schools having a tendency that if a kid breaks a school rule, not commits a crime, but breaks a school rule, they'll suspend the kid out of school, which puts them out in the streets, theoretically at home. But come on, let's be real. They're either going to watch videos, play video games, or they're going to go out and do some mischief. Instead of keeping them in school and making it an in-school punishment. Now, if a kid commits a crime, then they need to go to juvenile. They need to go to jail. Is there concern that maybe we're throwing too many kids out of school for minor things instead of them punishing them? Your punishment is stay in school.
Well, and I'm not an educator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you that my belief has been whether it's school,
mm-hmm.
whether it's prison, mm-hmm. jail, if we can find a way to help somebody get back on their feet,
mm-hmm.
that's preferable than just saying you're no good, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
People make mistakes. I've made mistakes. Everyone's made mistakes. Thank God for me, I've not made anything critical in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But my upbringing was different than a lot of people. I want to make sure that I never want to give up on a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And that's odd for someone that's been in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
People may think that's odd, but that's not really odd for police officers. They get, after a while, they get old and crusty like we all do at times because mm-hmm. of what we see.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I never want to give up on a human being. And sometimes I think when you say you're suspended or we're sending you to jail,
mm-hmm.
if there's no feedback
okay.
with that, if there's no positive reinforcement, there's not somebody trying to help them out of that,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if that really has any long-term benefit for us.
Let me go to Ramona at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi there.
You're on the air. What's up?
Yes. What I'm calling about, I have what is called a simple dummy question. But the reason I want to know is important to me because I said it might save my life now that I'm a senior citizen. What I wanted to know is when you are at an intersection and you make a 1/4 turn instead of the normal half turn, do you use your turn signal or do you just go on across? you know, it goes at a slant or like a diagonal.
Right.
Street.
And, you know, here's the thing. And all those areas can be different. Uh-huh. But here's my rule of thumb. If it's an intersection and you can go one or two ways, uh-huh. use your turn signal and be safe.
That's what I kind of thought. I just wasn't for sure.
Just use your turn signal. And if somebody thinks you're going to do that half turn, uh-huh. then they're going to slow up and stop riding on your rear end anyway. So that just safety. Uh-huh. Safety first, and if you that makes you feel safer, and it does make you safer, that's fine.
Right. Well, thank you so much. That's all I needed to know.
All right.
See,
we're
helpful here. We go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. How are you?
I'm fine.
Hi, Troy.
Hello.
Hi. I have a question. In places like Walmart, any Kroger's, they got what they call a fire lane there, and
yes, sir.
I noticed that a lot of policemen park in that area. Would it be better that we designated some close areas right up front for law enforcement instead of having the park in that area? I think that kind of concerns me because if a fire department's coming, that won't necessarily relate to the police.
Right. Well, and
that's a great idea.
You're absolutely correct. Here's the rule, though. If you're a police officer and you're at Walgreens to pick up a prescription, you're there to do some shopping, you're going in to take a break and get something to drink, you park where citizens park. If you're there for some type of run, if there's an incident inside, there's a shoplifter, there's an argument, there's a domestic, I want the officers to park as close to the door as possible and move inside. That's kind of the rule of thumb. It's not because you're a police officer does not mean you get special rights and rules. We are held to a higher standard than we should be. No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But if they're there on police action, I think that we can all agree we want them to be there. We want them to stop. We want them to get as close as possible. It may avert some type of issue, but if they're there to pick up a bag of chips and a Coke and take a break, they shouldn't be parking in that fire area.
Well, I just noticed some maybe doing security work for a facility.
Well, sometimes the facility for a visible present will ask them to park there. Just so they're visible and that people can see them when they enter and exit as a deterrent to crime. You know, it's all those. But if you see something that's a habitual issue, you know, let me know. And a good reminder by a sergeant at roll call usually has a way of taking care of those things.
Okay, and also I appreciate what I'm hearing from you. I hear some good Southern hospitality, some good grassroots respect for all people.
Amos, would it be okay if I just kind of share a personal story?
Sure.
And I'm glad you said that. I grew up in a poor area in Louisville, Kentucky. It was called Edgewood. And the reason it's called Edgewood is when it was built, it was on the edge of the woods. So it wasn't very creative, but that was the name of the place. And we had a two-bedroom home.
Wow.
You could step in, you could be in the hallway, and I don't want you to feel sorry for me. I had a great upbringing. We had a two-bedroom home. We had a floor furnace.
Right.
And you couldn't stand on it, burn your sneakers, and I got one pair of Converse a year, and I didn't want to burn those up. But we had a one bathroom. You could take a step in every direction to be in the what do we have, one, two, three, you know, five rooms and a utility room, basically.
Right.
So we didn't have a lot of – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just – what I'm hearing a voice behind the voice, and that is a – hello?
Yes, we're here.
Yes, I'm just hearing a good voice of values – that you didn't have a silver spoon under your tongue. You know what it is to come from nowhere and go somewhere.
Yeah, you know, I'm blessed that I was raised in a home. My mom and dad took very good care of me. It was a high crime area, and we had an incident when I got on the police. I lived at home when I got on the police department. Mm-hmm. I mean, I attended University of Louisville, couldn't afford to go anywhere else.
Right.
Not that that's a bad school, but, I mean, I had room and board there.
Right.
And so we went to University of Louisville, joined the police department. And the first day that I was on the police department, I walked in and sat down a roll call. And my captain came in, and there was a crime issue occurring in the neighborhood I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in and he said, growing up, I think I'd seen the police two times. One, chasing people through our neighborhood in mm-hmm. car pursuit. And number two, just on a routine patrol in 24 years of living there. And our captain... My captain, my boss on my first day said, I want you to step up patrols in that area. There's a crime issue. You can't trust any of them because there are a bunch of derogatory term insert there. And I thought, if I'm ever in a position, everyone gets treated with the same level of respect. If I see a homeless gentleman, I say, hello, sir, how are you doing this morning? I expect every employee that I have to have that same ethical foundation that people are treated with fundamental rights. I know what it is to be treated that way, not to the extent of many people. I'm not saying that, but I've had a little bit of taste of it, and quite frankly, I didn't like it.
I appreciate that. 239-13, tell me, go back to the phones, and another anonymous. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine.
Hey, I'd like to know the proper procedures of animal control. Are, by law, are they supposed to, if they don't get no results, take pictures of your license plates and your address to try to get information if they cannot get information? And when they don't get information, they call police for backup?
But is it involving a criminal investigation or?
No, animal control.
Right. Well, animal control can be involved in those type of investigations, and animal control also has the authority. Not all of them have been granted that authority to carry a gun and a badge and have law enforcement functions. So it sounds like if it's an investigation that could potentially be criminal, and they're not evading your property or something, yes, they have a right to do that. Now, if you're talking about a specific case, and I really don't want you to talk publicly about that, and I don't want to talk about that publicly, but if you'd like to share that offline, we will get that information, look into it, and have someone contact you.
Okay.
Okay?
You want to do that?
Yeah.
So hold on and give Chris your information off the air, and we'll share that with the director's staff, okay?
Okay.
And let me just say this. I never know where the response is going to be, mm-hmm. but I can mm-hmm. assure you that we're going to be truthful. And we're going to try to get to the bottom of it, and they will get a response.
All right, so hold on and give that information to Chris. I'll let me talk to Sam Carson at 239-1310. Hi, Sam.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Good afternoon, Public Safety Director. How are you?
You know what? I am doing great. I am loving Indianapolis, and I know that most people didn't like seeing the snow, but it was the first time in 2.5 years that I've seen snowflakes, and I enjoyed myself. My wife's still in Corpus Christi with our youngest son. And we've lived there for 3 years before moving from Louisville, and it was, I think, 89 and humid today. So,
hey, well, that's a start. But I wanted to say welcome to Indianapolis, and you do sound like a great person. And I would personally encourage your community to give you a chance. And what I mean by that is I don't know if you are aware or not, but the mayor, Greg Ballard, he won't talk to the black community. He won't come on the radio. He's boycotting Amos, and I was surprised that you were on the show today, and it's sending a bad signal to the black community, and I guess one of the hurdles that perhaps you will have is to get us to really give you a chance, because I guess the guy you work for, if he won't come and talk to the black community, evidently he doesn't even care what we have to say. He's not listening to us, so... when you interviewed, were you asked about your relationship with the black community or how you felt about the black community?
I was. I was asked about that. I was asked about diversity issues, and that seemed to be of great importance. The mayor has told me that it's my responsibility to represent all the citizens of the city of Indianapolis, and that's what I intend to do. And I can tell you that, you know, I grew up, I'm a white male. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. I attended schools back when forced busing was going on and there were riots in Louisville. I saw the detrimental aspects of that. And one of the things is once I got to middle school, I never was bused because I was in such a diverse school. And I will tell you that I appreciate diversity. I want all people to be treated fairly. And if you look at my record, the Louisville Defender, which is the predominant African-American newspaper in Louisville, Kentucky, that's read by a diverse group of citizens, obviously, gave me an award while I was there in Corpus Christi. Benjamin Jealous came to town and presented at the event he was at, presented with the President's Award from the NAACP. It's because not because I treat anybody with favoritism, I treat everyone equally and I respect everyone, and I hope that all segments of our community will give me a chance to prove that to you here in this great city.
239-1310. Thank you, Sam. 239-1310. It's After the News. Name is. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments with the Public Safety Director, Troy Riggs. Oh, we're back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's After the News. Name is. Quickly. Is one of the, you got a lot of challenges coming in. Is one of the challenges figuring out how to hire and promote minority police officers and firefighters to balance out the concerns of the FOP, concerns of the firefighters union, as well as the desire that this force, that your team, reflects more the diversity of Indianapolis?
That is a concern, and we want to make sure, you will hear me say this a lot, I want to make sure in everything we do, whether it's interaction with the public or it's promotional or it's hiring, that we want to be fair. Mm-hmm. Everyone has to get an equal shot. When I got on the police department, I always say I was blessed by the good Lord to get on the department because I knew no one. And when I showed up, probably 90% of our class had a former relative on there. They knew somebody. They had an advocate for them. Mm-hmm. I did not. But the good Lord took care of me. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that we are have a fair process and that our police department, with good qualified people, mirrors our community.
You get along, important. You getting along with the FOP?
I am. We've had some very good meetings. I met with them early on. I told them that there will be times we agree. Let's build on that. There'll be times we disagree, but let's work together not to make it personal. Let's try to work through these issues.
Let me go to Georgia right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Brown?
Got about a minute.
How you doing, Mr. Riggs?
I am doing great.
Hey, you sound like a nice man. I want to say this to Greg Ballard because I know he's listening. Don't you cross this man because he'll fight you. It's a flip side to him. Now,
Riggs.
Yeah. Troy.
Yes.
I want to say this to you. You know, like I say, you seem like a nice guy. And most of Southerners are nice people. I'm from Georgia. But look, let me tell you something. You know, like me, I can't be an Uncle Tom. I just can't be one. Now, and like you, I know the name that they call white people. But I can't say it over there.
I don't want you to.
No, I'm not, Brother Brown. You know me better than that.
All right.
But anyway, Mister, I hope you wish you all the luck. And I admire Mr. John Layton, the sheriff here. So I hope I can go down the road and say I admire you.
Well, and that will be my goal. And I will tell you, I admire the sheriff, too. We've had some good conversation. And in this recent event, we had the explosion. The sheriff and his deputy showed up in big force and were a huge support and help to us. And I sent him a text message and email thanking him for that. He's been very helpful.
All right, let me go to Denise right quick at 239-1310. Denise, you got about a minute.
Yeah, it's very important. My niece was punched in the face. My sister and her husband stay here in Indianapolis. What happened was in Fort Wayne, the officer punched my niece in the face. It's on Facebook. And while she was in handcuffs, he was choking her. He had his knee on. He pushed her down. When he punched her, she hit the ground.
And where was this?
This was in Fort Wayne, but my sister and her husband live here. And I was watching on Facebook, and I was looking at it, and they said, woman get beat up by a police officer.
All right, well, hold on. Hold on. Since I got the person here is in charge of police in Indianapolis, he's not in charge of the police in Fort Wayne. Have they contacted the NAACP in Fort Wayne?
Well, it just happened Saturday, and what we're trying to do is get help. And I said, well, I know Amos will know what to do. So I just got work. I didn't know that this was on the radio. And
well, here's what I want to do, and not take up a lot of time. They need to call the chief of police in Fort Wayne. They need to get a hold of the public safety director of Allen County, Indiana, and get a hold of the president of the NAACP in Fort Wayne. In that order. Okay?
Since that's 23, they told her this.
Well, no, I got it. I'm running short of time. Let me go to Anonymous. Will be the last caller. Hi, Anonymous.
Ooh, hey, how you doing?
Got ooh, about a minute.
All right, hotline. Hey, how you doing, Mr. Riggs?
I'm doing great.
All right, I listened to you, and I think that you are a fair and honest man. There are a lot of officers in African-American communities that go parole through and are still like the people that you've mentioned before. What I am trying to find out, I've done a, it was like a report for school, for Ivy Tech class, to go to a community event, and it was a police event that was there, and the police officers were more interacting with themselves. They weren't out, like I brought my kids and my wife, what can be done, or what have you set up so where officers can actually start interacting in these areas and be more diverse and understand it and kind of.
He's got the point. Let me let him respond right quick.
We are working on that, and I can tell you, watch some of the initiatives and plans we have that we'll announce in January. That's extremely important. And it's something I hear from the officers. They want to do more of that.
They want to do more of that.
I've heard that from the FOP and the officers that I've spoken to. And I will tell you that your story will be told to individuals that I speak with. And we're going to change that by working together as a community with our officers on the police department. So thank you. Thank you very much for that phone call.
While I'm taking this picture, his name is Troy, last name Riggs. He's the Director of Public Safety for Indianapolis and Marion County. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And we ran out of time. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, live at 1.